Occupy corporations has become the next big goal of American protesters demanding economic, social and political justice for months. How is the Occupy movement affecting the United States? What pushed these people to the point of frustration? And how has the government responded to all this? Welcome to News Analysis.
U.S. Occupy protesters plan to take center stage once again by making their voices heard at offices and headquarters of big corporations on Wednesday. This time, the demonstrators have targeted corporations that are members of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. The 99%ers say corporations like Walmart and Bank of America use ALEC to buy off legislators in order to make laws that only serve the interests of companies, not the people.
On February 29th, in more than 70 cities around the country, there will be demonstrations against the corporations. And we're emphasizing the fact that really, although politicians are involved in this, it's the corporations behind it that are seeking to profit from pushing their own agendas into our own legislatures without really democratic input.
This comes after several successful days of actions, including shut down the ports along the East Coast and occupied a court in Washington, D.C., which drew thousands of supporters from around the country. Wednesday's protest seemed to have already gotten underway. On Saturday, police in Sarasota, Florida, attacked a group of protesters and arrested a disabled Iraq war veteran for writing slogans against the ALEC at a park. Meanwhile, on Monday, Occupy protesters in Sacramento, California, faced off with members of a racist group which claims thousands of whites have been massacred by blacks in South Africa. Police escorted the pro-white South Africa Project protesters and arrested at least four occupiers. U.S. police have come under heavy criticism for their heavy-handed crackdown on the anti-capitalism protesters. Police have so far made nearly 7,000 arrests during peaceful protests and forceful evictions of Occupy encampments. However, that seems to have had little effect on the protesters' resolve to end social and political inequality in the U.S.
Joining me now live from New York is Caleb Maupin with the International Action Center. I'd also like to welcome Mr. Lin Din, writer and political analyst, joining us live from Philadelphia. And with us via Skype from Idaho is author and political commentator, Mr. Mark Glenn. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. I'd like to put my first question to our guest in New York. Caleb, first of all, as someone who's engaged in the Occupy protest movement, tell us about the National Day of Action to shut down the corporations. What is exactly the aim of this action?
Well, I would just put it this way. Occupy Wall Street is an expression of the fact that most people in this country are fully aware of the fact that this idea that this is a democratic country is false. The bankers and the corporations have the power, and we, the people, who supposedly are supposed to rule in a democratic society, don't have the power. The power belongs to those with the wealth, and we, the 99%, are tired of that, and we're pouring out into the streets, we're demanding this change, and we're putting our bodies on the line to challenge that. And in the process, many of us are learning for the first time that the 1% has always ruled this country. All this rhetoric about democracy is false, and the only way we can bring a real democracy into being is through being in the streets, through challenging their power and demanding our right to jobs, education, healthcare, and all the things that human beings are entitled to, that this system takes away from people, because in capitalism, people only can survive if they're able to sell their labor to a capitalist. And what we're saying is that that form of existence is degrading, and it's not necessary. People should have the right to jobs and education, and we're going to demonstrate and demand that they get it.
Right. Mr. Linden, the next question that I'd like to put to you here is what the Occupy protesters, those who are protesting corporations, have been saying in their sites. They've been saying that they're specifically targeting corporations that use the American Legislative Exchange Council to buy off legislators and craft legislation that serves the interests of those corporations, and I'm quoting them now. Tell us about this Exchange Council and the role of corporations in American politics and economy.
Well, okay, I agree with everything that's just been said. I'd like to go back to the original premises of the Occupy movement, in that they wanted to target Wall Street, which was a brilliant idea, which is to focus focus people's attention to the heart of the problem, that there's a handful of banks, six or seven banks that are running this country. Okay, I agree with everything that's just been said, but here's the problem. Another original premise of the Occupy movement was that they're going to disrupt the system, because there have been many protests in the United States, and most of them only take place for one day or one afternoon. And the original premise of the Occupy movement is that they're going to disrupt the system. They're going to occupy Wall Street. They're going to disrupt it from functioning. Mm-hmm. Now, it didn't happen that way because, the government here knows how dangerous that is. So they had hundreds of policemen surrounding the Wall Street edifice for months to prevent this from happening. So what happened was they could only occupy a park. So that became the motto nationwide. So the Occupy movement became like this occupation of a space that didn't really matter, okay? You can occupy as many parks as you want, and the system will not change. So I would like the Occupy movement to move forward and to return to its original premise of disrupting the system. And until that happens, nothing will change, including tomorrow. And I'm not belittling the people who are putting their bodies on the line, who are getting beaten up, who are getting arrested. But until you can disrupt the system, it will go on and do what it has always done, which is starting wars and ripping people off and disrupting and ruining lives.
Right. Well, Lynn Din says that the Occupy protesters should disrupt the system. Let's go to Idaho now. Mark Glenn, do you think that, do you agree with that statement that the occupiers should do that? And if so, how should they do that?
Absolutely, he is correct in that these corporations have no soul, they have no sense of morality, they have no regard for human rights or human dignity. They're never going to do the right thing based upon the fact that it is the right thing to do. For them, it will always be based upon the bottom line and what their profits are. So Mr. Lynn Din is correct in the sense that if you really want to see things change, you have to hit them where it hurts the most, which is in their bottom line and in their profits. So. In that regard, he is correct, and I also would like to bolster what he said concerning the young people who are putting their lives literally on the line to go out there against a very formidable force. We should not necessarily allow arguments such as discussions such as what we're having right now to overshadow the fact that these people are making great sacrifices for what they believe in. I think what Mr. Din is saying here is that we need precision here. We need to, if we're going to go out and put our lives on the line against what is, for all intents and purposes, a monster, let's make sure that it counts. Let's make sure that something substantive does come from it. And they are correct that we can make things change. Your own country, Homa, of Iran, is perfect proof of that. In 1979, they had decided that they had had enough of Western financial and political interests deciding what would be the course for the Iranian people. Mm. And they fought a real revolution, and 33 years now later, they still are an independent country. So this thing can happen. We should not allow the size of our enemy to dictate whether or not we will actually go out onto the battlefield and first fight for something that we know is just and right.
Right, back to New York now. Caleb, we're seeing here our guests in Philadelphia and Idaho saying that they should disrupt the system, that they should do something that will count. Do you think that that is possible? What can these protesters do that would count and that would lead them forward? Because we know, of course, how strong the corporations are. We know, of course, how strong and protected, as our guest was saying, Wall Street is. So what can these protesters do to actually count?
In the short term, if we wish to win concessions and force the ruling elite to concede and stop doing some of the horrific things they're doing, like destroying the environment or laying people off, you have to hit their profits. The fact that they continue to rake in profits as suffering continues allows them to continue it. But when their profits are affected, that's one short-term. Victories can be won in the short term by affecting their profits. But in the long run, we have to realize that all the problems that Occupy Wall Street has raised, whether it's destruction of the environment, mass layoffs, the rising prices of education, unemployment, they're all rooted in the fact that we have a system where profits are the determiner of what goes on in the economy. We have a very collective society. People come together to build buildings. People come together to teach schools. People come together and collectively do all kinds of things. But the products they create collectively end up belonging to a small 1%, and they own the products that we come together and create. And ultimately, if we're going to change these horrors, we need to cease that. That needs to end, and people need to be able to collectively share in the products that they collectively produce.
Right. When we are looking at the effects that this movement is or can have, Mr. Lin Din, I'll put this question to you. One effect is going to be on the presidential election, presumably, that's going to take place in November. Do you think that there is going to be any effect at all on the elections in terms of who people choose? We know, of course, that there have been protests against the Republican presidential hopefuls, but does this mean that people trust the Democrats?
I have visited about 8 Occupy camps repeatedly, and I can tell you that most of the people in these camps have no faith in the political system as is. So I myself have no faith in any substantial changes in the next election. It's just a circus. It's just a distraction. Basically, the system cannot be changed from within. And that should be one of the primary messages of the Occupy protest movement. Like I said, the system, in fact, Time Magazine voted the protester person of the year. Now, if you have such a mainstream media patting you on the head, it means that they are not afraid of you. So if the system can brush off this protest movement by giving it a kind of backhanded accolade, then we know that we're not going far enough. So I expect nothing to happen from this election, but the national conventions coming up will give this Occupy movement a renewed focus to do something substantial. And I think they need to come up with newer strategies because we don't have all the time in the world. We're not talking about 5 or 10 years. In fact, when Time Magazine gave the Occupy movement the Man of the Year award, they compared it to the Civil Rights Movement and say it took 10 years for the Civil Rights Movement to achieve concrete results. But frankly, we do not have 10 years.
And in Idaho, Mark Glenn, when Lin Din says there that what people are not trusting is not just the Republicans or the Democrats, but the system, is there then an awareness, maybe you could say, rising among the Americans against the two-party system or the way that even elections are held in the United States? Because a lot of observers have been saying that people are not directly voting for those who they want to have to win votes. So basically, do you think that this is about a lack of trust in the system? And does that mean that this Occupy movement is going to result maybe in a three-party system or in some kind of change in the current political system?
Unfortunately, I have to agree with what Mr. Lin Din said. I don't see anything substantively changing. And it's not that that there aren't resources available to do this, but rather because the American people as a whole, we are the product of the same mass media programming that Mr. Lin Din talked about. Like it or not, we are a product of that. And this mass media programming has really created a society of people who are, for all intents and purposes, lazy, complacent, and really, for lack of better terminology, stupid when it comes to understanding the political processes that are affecting their lives on a daily basis. You will still see in this upcoming election, despite this unprecedented economic and social turmoil that we are going through in this country right now, you will still see the bulk of the American electorate, those who actually bother to turn up and vote, they're going to vote down party lines. They're not going to vote for principle. The situation right now with the Republican primaries is a perfect example of that. Clearly, you have at least one candidate who is standing out amidst the other Republican contenders here, and as imperfect as he may be, the fact is that Ron Paul is speaking to the needs and the frustrations of the common man or woman in America as far as their economy goes, as far as their ability to make ends meet, and yet Ron Paul has been shuffled to the back of the bus, so to speak, within his party and is being given absolutely no attention whatsoever. So the fact of the matter is that until the American people, and let's look at it this way. Let's take somebody who is grossly overweight, okay, as our example. And this person knows that he is overweight and that it's causing him health problems, and he can sit and complain about it all day long about how he needs to lose weight, but until he actually gets down to the business of doing the difficult task of exercising and watching what he eats, nothing is going to change.
Right.
And unfortunately, this model that I have just used in describing, you know, a person who wants things to change but is not willing to do what's necessary to do it, this is the American people. They're going to sit and complain about their situation while they're stuffing fattening foods into their mouths, and they will keep continuing to elect these criminals to high office who are going to rob them blind and further endanger them, their loved ones, when it comes to expanding these very profitable wars that are taking place throughout the world.
Right. Back to New York. Caleb, I'd like to raise another point here, and that is the police brutality claims that we've been hearing of against the Occupy demonstrators. They've been complaining about the brutal police crackdowns, the near-lethal force that's been used against them, the indiscriminate use, they say, of weapons like pepper gas, tear gas. Why are we, first of all, seeing this? Would you say that this is just a singular instance of police action to stop protesters, for instance, from occupying a space that they shouldn't legally? Or is this more about a systematic approach in the way that the government has chosen to deal with the Occupy demonstrators?
It's not just the Occupy demonstrators who've been subject to this kind of terror and repression by the parasitical class that runs this country, those who own the banks, the factories, the corporations, and ultimately the government as a result. It's a continued pattern that has gone on. The FBI sent death threats to Martin Luther King. There was a repeated campaign to destroy the Black Panther Party. Back when the unions were militant and revolutionary in the 1930s, there was campaigns against things like the Trade Union Unity League, where FBI terror was used against them. The 1% has always owned this government. The founding fathers, those were the plantation owners and the wealthy people that ran the government from the beginning, and they continue to do so. And the glorious thing about Occupy Wall Street is that people are realizing that the problem isn't one politician or other. It's the problem is that a parasitical class of rulers who exploits the labor of not just people in this country but all over the world and continues to get rich off of the work that all of us do, they're the problem. And that the only way to change things is to confront them, to be in the streets, and to make clear that their business as usual cannot continue as long as people are suffering. And we will be out there in huge numbers, and ultimately we need to fight to get to the point where they're no longer in control, and that these banks and these factories, which we all have created, can come into common ownership. You know, that's ultimately what we have to fight for.
Right. And Lyndon, I'd like to bring up the case of police brutality with you as well. We know that the recent police killings of a black teenager in his grandmother's house and also a black officer in front of his two daughters, that's put the case of police brutality also high on the agenda of these protesters. There are also, of course, criticisms about the stop and frisk program in New York, the National Defense Act that was approved by President Obama. The question now would be, some are asking actually, is America becoming a police state?
Well, yes, of course it is a police state. It's interesting that these laws are being passed now. It's a kind of a legal preparation for what's going to come next. Because even as the government preaches nonviolence towards the protesters, that has become a kind of accepted common ideology that you should not resort to violence unless you are the state. So even as they preach that to us, they are preparing to deal with actual outbreak of violence, because it's inevitable that's going to happen. Because as the American people become more impoverished, they're going to get angrier, and there's going to be outbreaks, just as in Greece and Spain, and I suspect it's going to be even worse here. Because, I mean, we are the leader in violence, you know, of any kind. So the government is putting laws into place where they can arrest you without charge. You have no access to a lawyer. They can even kill you without charge. So since those laws are already in place, we do have a fascist government, okay? So in the months ahead, I expect not less violence, but more violence. From the state and likely from the protesters, because people are very upset.
Mark Len, would you say then that the Obama administration has chosen this approach of a systematic crackdown on the protesters and moving towards, as Lindin says, a police state? And is this having an effect on the protest movement in terms of weakening it? As you say there, people not actually being able to bring about change.
Well, I would say that the Obama administration is no different in this regard than its predecessor. The United States, for all intents and purposes, has been a police state for a long time, okay? Just because there may not have been legal provisions for the government to do the kinds of things that it has now legalized itself into doing, such as the National Defense Authorization Act, did not stop the U.S. government from doing what it wanted to do when it came to silencing protesters. So in that regard, the United States has been a police state for a long time. And now I do agree with what Mr. Lindin said, that it is going to continue to get worse as the situation in this country continues to break down economically, socially, politically. And the protesters, I feel, are probably going to reach this point where they're not afraid anymore, and they will begin to react, meeting violence with violence. It's an unfortunate thing, but it is human nature. An animal that is cornered will fight to the death to save itself. And so my fear is that what is going to take place is, I mean, let's face it, the wealthy and the powerful, they didn't get to where they are by being stupid. They know how to anticipate what is coming around the bend, and they will find a way to utilize this to their own enrichment. I hate to paint such a negative picture of it, but this is the way history has generally worked itself out to be. And that a lot of these protests, if they're not focused in the right way, let's put it this way. If we were able to gather people together, and just with using boycotts, okay, boycotts alone, and to hit the powerful corporations and the people behind them in a substantive way on their bottom line with profits, we could bring them to their knees in a very, very short amount of time.
Right, Mark, I'd just like to stop you there, if I may, because we're running out of time, and I'd like to have the closing comments now by Caleb. Caleb, as Mark says there, with this approach that's been taken by the Obama administration, the way that the regime is cracking down on the protests, do you think that the demands of the protesters is going to be realistic demands, and that are they going to be able to bring about those changes, at least in the near future?
They absolutely will be able to win their demands. It may take a long time, but it will happen. History is like a train, and you can't stop a train as it speeds forward. And history, the age of the empires and of profiteers and of capitalists is over, and the people of the world are as one rising up against them. And it may take a long time to ultimately win, but this system cannot continue to operate the way it is. People are in a state of revolt all throughout the United States for the first time in a generation, and it's just the beginning. If you think 2011 was great, 2012 is going to be even better.
Caleb Maupin with the International Action Center joining us there live from New York. Thank you very much. Big thank you to Lin Din, writer and political analyst, joining us from Philadelphia. And in Idaho via Skype, author and political commentator, Mr. Mark Glenn. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'm afraid we've run out of time. From me, Homa Lesgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.